This podcast is part of the Blueberry Network. You can find this and other great podcasts at blueberry.com. That's blueberry with no E's .com.
Hi, this is Dave with a special announcement. Marsha, John, and I want to have brunch with you. That's right. We're going to be recording Theater Geeks Live again this year in a special fundraising brunch cast at the Bristol Opera House, Bristol, Indiana, on Saturday, November 5th. Brunch starts at 10:30 a.m. with a live podcast at 11:30 until 1. Proceeds benefit Elkhart Civic Theater. Watch the website and listen to the podcast for details about this special event as our plans develop. For right now, mark your calendar and plan to be there Saturday, November 5th at 10:30 a.m. We're planning special guests, audience participation, and just plain fun, so be there or be square. For updates in your email, be sure you're signed up for the Theater Geeks newsletter. Just go to theatergeeks.com and click on Get Our Newsletter in the upper left corner. See you at the Brunchcast, Saturday, November 5th.
Dr. Lun here.
Dr. Lun with a banana.
Dr. Lun with a banana.
Here we go. I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaup.
I'm Marsha Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Hi, welcome to Theater Geeks, the podcast about community theater and the performing arts. We are talking again with a repeating, they won't go away. I don't know what the problem is. They just can't get rid of them.
I am a bad penny.
There's a bad penny. There we go. We have Doug Lun, who is a school psychologist and theater geek, as well as vocal director, actor, etc.,
and dancer,
singer, raconteur. I love the word raconteur. I have very little understanding of what it means, but anyway, there we go.
But I'm sure he's it.
Yes, right. And we have Annette Kazanowski, who is an actress, director, youth theater director, and all around good buddy at our theater.
What does that mean?
I don't know. Why would I say?
I don't know because
does everything I say have to mean something, Marsha?
Yes, David. To me, it always means something.
Yeah, you're overanalyzing. Anyway, yeah, welcome to both Doug and Annette. Thanks for being with us. We wanted to talk about in this episode just acting tips and ways to approach roles. Annette, you are also trained actress from
Western Michigan.
Western Michigan. Yeah, and you've kind of do it all, really. I mean, you've musicals and dramas and straight comedies and things like that. Is the approach always the same when as an actor? And Doug, you know, same question, really.
Well, no, and it depends. I mean, genre makes a difference, but each individual show is different too. The approach in one musical, in terms of development of character and acting, is going to be different from the approach in another musical because musicals are written differently.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of the basics are always there, but the things that I focus on and the ways that I approach can definitely change.
Okay. Does character come from the script, or does it come from the director, or both, or what do you think?
Well, ideally the character comes from the script.
Yeah.
The script is where everything should start, and it comes from what the character says, the words that the character chooses, what other people say to her, what they say about her, what's in the lines of the script. So, you know, I start working on character. If I get cast in a show, I start working on character before I ever go to the first rehearsal. Because I'm trying to get to know who she is in the script. And so I start, you start making decisions. You have to make decisions right from the start, I think, to give the director somewhere to go with me. And then if the director says, you know what I'm really looking for is something a little bit more over here, that's fine. I'm happy to adapt. I love getting direction. I'm happy to be flexible and to change and to try and fit in with the director's vision. But if I start with the script, I'm usually not going to go wrong. I'm usually going to start down the right direction anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think it's interesting. You're talking about people starting with the script, and one of the things that I've seen as a director myself, and I don't know if you've seen this, are actors who read their part of the script and try to delineate their character or define their character on the scenes that they're in, but forget that there's an entire script and they may not be in five scenes, and that some of those scenes may talk about the character.
Right.
And that you can learn so much more if you decide to read the script, read the whole script. Have you ever
read the whole script?
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
Well, and it does take time, and I know everybody is busy. People who do community theater are doing it in their free time, and we're so delighted to have anybody who wants to give it. But, you know, to develop a character, it absolutely takes time. I usually read a script, you know, 2-3 times. I usually read it a couple times to myself and then maybe once out loud before I get to the first rehearsal. Because I need to be able to see where my character fits in with the whole show, what the whole picture is, to understand what my piece.
So you like when you read it out loud, do you have to go somewhere so people don't think you're a little crazy reading aloud to no one, or what?
Or
do you read it to your children?
I have a high tolerance with being thought crazy. So,
oh, okay.
I do. I mean, you know, I'm a stay-at-home mom, so I do have time. I do it, you know, I do it in the kitchen. I do it, you know, in the living room when everybody is watching a movie downstairs. There have been times when I've had to do really particular work, and this is farther along. Like with Lena Lamont, there was one point in the rehearsal process where I thought, you know, I need to get this physicality down, and I need to do it while being up and working and saying the lines aloud. And every time I tried it, I'd have kids and dogs staring at me. So I set my alarm for 6 o'clock one Sunday morning, and I locked myself in the sunroom, and I just worked until everybody else started getting up. And by the time I was done, I had it. I had achieved what I needed to do for that day. So yeah, sometimes you have to find privacy.
Do you think that some actors, especially at community theater, approach character as being an accent, and maybe the accent is, you know, the most important thing in their heads, and the body language, the physicality of the character is kind of secondary, or they just don't know how to approach it?
Oh, well, absolutely. And that's another thing that, you know, we talk about training and teaching, and, you know, and that's part of the things that we need to try and develop in our actors, because not everybody knows how to find physicality for a character. And definitely an accent can get to be a crutch. Ideally, if you use an accent, it'll be a tool.
Right.
But it's a very easy mistake to say, this is my accent, this is my character. But you need to go deeper than that. What's going on in your character's heart and life, and what do they want in life and in this scene and at this particular moment, and, you know, what's crushing them down or building them up, and, you know, and how do I identify with them? You know, I've played a few bad guys, which has been a lot of fun. And one of the things that I've always done is to get to the point where I love her, and I Louise in Postmortem comes to mind. She's crazy. But I had to get to the point where I understood every choice that she made leading up to this point and could see why it made sense to her.
Right. And she's not obviously crazy until late in the game.
Right.
Yeah. Not to the audience.
But I know she's crazy.
Right, right, right. Yeah, that's true. That's true. So, and you have to like the craziness.
You have to like it. You have to understand it and accept that these choices made sense to her. She did what she thought she had to do all the way along.
Mm-hmm.
Well, how do you feel about having your actors, the actors, write backstories for each one of their characters?
If it works for them, that's great. I don't know that it's, you know, it's not a magic pill. It doesn't necessarily get people where they need to be. But for some people, it really works. So if they are willing to try it.
I only asked because there was a director that we had that used it. That's what the first thing you had to do when you were cast write a scenario for what brought this character to this particular point. You know,
seems like there's a risk of writing the wrong backstory.
Well,
there.
Yeah, of course there is.
You know, and then,
especially if you do it that early in the rehearsal.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, a lot of times it's developed. I think backstories can be developed as the rehearsal process is going on.
Yes.
With the characters that you're interacting with, and so that you know once you feel comfortable with them, you kind of start to have an interaction, and you kind of start to know what the backstories are, too. So.
And you learn so much from your interaction with your fellow actors about who your character is by, you know, how they're relating to this other. And that's another problem, I guess, with backstories could be, is that if my backstory relates to you, but your backstory goes in a whole different direction, then now we're trying to relate to each other in ways that don't make sense.
Doug, what's your backstory?
Oh, no, I have one
confidential.
More question. I have one more question. You were talking about accents. Sorry. And I have a problem sometime when I see, I'm talking about musicals, okay? Mm-hmm. And you see an actor who has a great English accent, whatever, Scottish, what. But when they open their mouths to sing, it's straight up American.
Texas.
And that just drives me crazy. You know, if you're English here, why are you not English when you're singing? Or German or Swiss or whatever.
Well, and that's, I mean, yes. I mean, because that's, I think, a whole nother talent is when, you know, one thing saying it spoken, another thing singing, you know, you have to work on that. I think sometimes people are told not to sing in an accent because it's getting hard to understand.
Okay, I guess I'll buy that, but I don't agree if they're Irish. I want them to be Irish.
The other thing, I guess, if you're going to do that, does it make sense to just say, back off the accent when you're speaking? Because, you know, there's degrees of accent. Yeah. You can be slightly British, or you can be like really British, and then maybe the contrast isn't so great if you back off the accent a little bit. I mean, it might help.
I didn't know the Monkees were not American until somebody told me. Not the Monkees, the Beatles, that they weren't American until somebody said.
Oh, because you just heard them sing.
And they didn't have an accent when they sang. Mm-mm.
It's because they were copying Buddy Holly.
Well, but I didn't know that. I was two.
Sure, you
okay. Whatever.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
Do you do much?
We're moving on. We're moving on now.
Do you do much research, historical research, like into era and things of that nature before you get started with a character?
Sometimes, depending on who it is. Certainly, if my character is a historical character, then I definitely want to. I need to find out who she really was before I can find out who she is in the script. And, you know, if they're. You know, if it takes place, if she's somebody who has survived the Holocaust, then I need to find out what that would have done to her. And mm-hmm. I need to, so, and, you know, and there are smaller points of research too, where if, I remember in The Man Who Came to Dinner, Lorraine Sheldon was, what a name dropper. And it was just name after name after name. And so, you know, there was research into, I needed to know who each of those people were. Most of them were real people, a couple weren't. But, because who they were is going to affect how she would say their name. You know, it all goes into that. But so research is definitely a part of it, and it's certainly always helpful, I think, the more you know, study you can do.
Do you find that you read? Do you read historically? I mean, are you more interested in like historical romance or anything like that that might also help you? I mean, any kind of literature you like, genre?
Well, I like Jane Austen.
Oh,
well. Okay.
So, you know, the turn into the 19th, the early 19th centuries would be probably my era.
Especially if it's Colin Firth.
There you go.
There you go.
So what's your typical first rehearsal like? What's going through your head in the first rehearsal?
Help. As an actor?
And then I'll remember this the next time you're in a show I'm directing, so.
Well, you know, if you're talking about first blocking rehearsal or first read-through?
Oh, first read-through. Let's just start from the very beginning.
When I was in college and I had an experience where at the end of a show, my director came up to me and he said, it was to me and to my leading man, both of us, remarked that our first read-through was so terrible that we needed to be careful that our first read through was not so terrible that we terrified the directors that we were going to be bad, you know, because then we were excellent is what he was saying. But so, you know, every time I go to a first read through, my main focus is I need to not be horrible.
Well, you know, I think at least in community theater, one of the reasons for the first read through is so that you know that everyone has actually read the whole script. You know what I mean? And it solves that little problem.
And listen to it. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and sometimes you've got the guy who shows up at the very end and he's only got three or four lines, but he gets to hear the whole show. And I think even for a part like that, it helps. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So, right. But yeah, the read throughs are I mean, I don't think I do too much judgment at that point as a director, certainly.
I do. Good to know. I think a read-through, though, can also help a director understand maybe where a person's going to start to take a character.
Yeah, it can. It can help.
You know, especially if they've done the initial work, like Annette has talked about, you'll start to see where the character's going to go, and you'll know whether or not you like it or and maybe how you're going to expand upon that or something of that nature, too, as a director.
Yeah, and in Community, that's where you also hear the first stabs at bad accents.
I think my rule is no accent is much better than a bad accent.
Mm-hmm. I think you're probably right, David. Yes. Well,
this episode
not
singer.
As an actor, but you know, you always have what people accent? Doing yeah. really strong accents, and some of them are okay and good, and some of them are just like, what?
Yeah, what accents do you do reasonably well? What are your trademark Lord. Accents? I'm sure you can do British.
Well, yeah, I can do British. I can do sort of that, you know, East Coast, upper echelon sort of thing. Beyond that, I could do French, German, I guess.
Southern Texan.
She does Bleach Blonde,
I could do Southern.
Too.
She does Bleach Blonde do really
Bleach
well.
Blonde.
We can all see that.
Yes. You know, if I'm going to do an accent, beyond British, I probably, maybe I should do research for British accents, but I usually don't. But I probably would do a little bit of research to make sure.
Yeah, there are different types of British accents. Just ask Henry Higgins.
Oh, yes.
But do you, if it's an, this is kind of a side topic almost, but how do you use tapes? Or, because I accents. Sometimes tell my actors to watch this movie, there's the accent that you want.
Mm-hmm. And I will do that. I will, there is a tape actually at the Elkhart Public Library that has just about any accent that you would want that not only gives you lets you hear it, but also breaks it down for you. This is what you have to do with your A's. This is what you do with your N's. You know, that also can be helpful. One time I had a friend of mine who I knew was from the area that I was supposed to be doing come in and go over all my lines for me, and I taped her saying them so that I could hear how it should sound. Okay.
Talking about character and emotions of a character, Do you ever find yourself on that edge where the character's emotions are really your own all of a sudden, and you're kind of crossing that line, and you think, "Oh my God, I'm going crazy," and because you're really not Louise, but for that minute you are, and maybe you're over that edge. I don't know.
Yeah, I love that.
You do? Okay. I love schizophrenia.
A little bit. Well, I do. It's to feel another emotion very deeply and very strongly, and then to leave it behind and go back to my own life. You know, it's a little bit refreshing, even if the emotion is a little bit crazy. If it is, you know, it can be a problem if I start feeling that way, you know, while I'm having dinner with my family.
She's looking at her daughter going,
right.
And then I need to take a step away from the show a little bit.
Right.
But I do. That's a good thing.
But you don't find that as a losing control kind of thing?
Well, I hope that I never lose control. Mm-hmm. That's even if I am identifying emotionally, my mind is always working because it has to be. My mind has got to be in control because I got to be thinking about, okay, it's fine that I'm feeling this right now, but I also have to do this with my hand, and I have to get to that side of the stage, and I have to say
right.
these words.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a repetition. So it's maintaining that illusion that you're really feeling it, and yet you're controlling the action at the same time.
So there's more than one thing going on in the
Yeah. The other thing I was going to mention, too, is that Annette has been in a couple of shows that I've directed. You always come in pretty much off book, pretty if it's not the first day, close to within the first week or so, which is kind of unusual in community theater. What's the big tip for memorization that you use? That's we've talked about this on other shows.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's my biggest tip is to working things by section. If I don't pick up a script and just try and read all of my lines all the way through the play, I will take a scene and I will start with the first speech on that page, and I will you know, I will get up and do it with the blocking like I would do it on the, you know, do it on the stage, and hopefully with the emotion. Emotion for me is a real memory trigger. So getting emotionally connected is a big thing. But, you know, I get one speech, and then I add a second speech, and then I get those two, and then I add the third, and I keep on going like that. That's what I do when I really start working on memorization. By the time I get to first rehearsal, I haven't usually done that yet. I have just read it through a few times, tried to connect emotionally, and thought about it a lot. Like, you know, in the shower, I'm going through the scene, what happens to me, and when you're doing that, the lines, they start to settle in. I also, later on, if I'm, especially if I have a lot of long speeches or a lot of similar speeches, I also use a microphone and a computer, and I tape myself and then go back through and mark everything.
Okay, so you're a
taper.
Yeah, I never used that successfully. And but I connect with you in terms of the, you know, blocking being my trigger, and that's really the best success I have is if I happen to have the blocking. If you don't have the blocking, then memorization is tougher. But I'm kind of like, hey, if I'm standing down here and so-and-so is over there, I must be time to say this. That's what my brain is doing anyway.
Right.
You know,
and
you
hopefully kinda, so-and-so will always be over there.
Right, yeah, that's, yeah. That's well.
Because they may not.
After a certain amount of repetition, so-and-so isn't there. Your first thing is, so-and-so is not there, but I know I'm supposed to say this. Then that's the response. For somebody who's just beginning or who is just in a first show, what, I mean, I don't know, just anybody, what kind of advice do you give someone who's in a first, in a first production or first community theater production, just in, as an actor, what, I don't know, is there sort of like a rule to live by? There's probably a lot of them.
Be on time.
Oh, jeez. That's the director speaking.
There you go.
Be on time.
Well, no, well, but okay. It helps. I mean, yeah, just to get into that framework that I'm always going to be here every day on this day, yeah. You know, at this time, and that's going to become part of my life for the next 8 weeks.
That helps you memorize?
Well, that's not what...
Well, no, that's
it helps you. It helps you be a better part of the cast. And speaking of being on time, we are out of time for this episode of Theater Geeks. So we're going to close this one out, and hopefully Doug and Annette are going to hang around for one more at least today, and we will have some more to talk about in terms of acting and things like that. The we just need to remind you to go to the website, www.theatergeeks.com. You can check out our online store at theatergeeks.com/store, where Doug buys all of his
underwear.
Thank you. And we also have hats and cups and mugs and things like that there. Next week with photos. There we go. And so also remember that you can subscribe online to our newsletter, which is easy to sign up for, and you'll get a reminder when the new episodes come out. But the best way is to sign up or to subscribe via iTunes, the Zune Marketplace, or at blueberry.com. So there's a lot of ways that you can stay up to date as to what we're doing and new episodes as they come out. So I'm Dave Dufour.
I'm John Schaub.
And I'm Marcia Fulmer, and we are Theater Geeks.
Music for Theater Geeks was provided by MusicAlley.com.